There will be live stand-up sets from Adam Passy and Dan Weber and live music by Pedro Queriega. Again, that's Bonds Over Borders on Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. at The Cleaners at Ace Hotel, 403 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 7:59. Coming up next on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, they speak with Rose City Antifa about this weekend's rally, and they take your calls. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 5 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
We got a show today, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I want to just remind people you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor, and he's way more rational than I am.
That's also true.
Yes. Well, that's not true. I'm being nice. And I'm Joe Uris. You should call us at 231-8187. What we're going to do today is we're going to once again talk with the Antifa people.
Yes.
Because there's a big thing happening, what?
17th? On the 17th, yes, this weekend.
Yes, this weekend. Big thing.
Big thing, yeah. Patriot Prayer, you remember them.
How can they go across borders to make trouble and not get in trouble?
Well, here in the United States, one can cross freely between states. I imagine they took one of the bridges.
But
between Washington
State. But I believe crossing borders with intent to crime is crime.
Well, it's pretty hard to prove that intent, I would
You mean
say.
It's just an accident that wherever they go, things happen?
Yeah, pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence.
No, it's not an accident. I think we're going to get into that a little bit today.
Yeah,
but I want to...
Go ahead. No.
All right, I want to put one thing on the table here today. And that's in response to some of the feedback we've gotten online to our previous broadcast a couple of weeks ago when we had guests from Rose City Antifa.
Yeah, and by the way, we appreciate their being on. I know they have certain ritual concerns as well as very valid concerns.
Yeah, and also feedback I've gotten personally from people in my life, and that's questioning why do we give airtime to a group like Antifa who insists on anonymity and who uses tactics that are questionable and really this is what I want to address directly, drawing an equivalence between Antifa and the people that they show up to resist, which are the fascists.
Well, I think that's the Trump strategy, is to say they're both alike, or Antifa is in fact a communist. They're reviving the term communist, the communist men.
Well, right, of course. The conservative side, the Trump side, you're absolutely right, is pumping up Antifa as this demonic, violent left. Right. But they're going to do that. Right. They're going to do that anyway.
Right.
They're going to do that just like they're going to say they're going to call leftist socialists, even if we promise to give a free gun to every man, woman and child in the country.
Right. I think they go beyond that. They call everybody communists.
Gun socialism if that happened. Right.
Yeah, gun
so
socialism.
I want to establish something very clearly here. Now, that argument has some resonance with the left, too. There are many on the left, and I think it's probably fair to count you among them and myself, maybe to a lesser extent, who absolutely reject Antifa's tactics, who say that there's...
No, I don't. I want to be clear.
Okay. So I was wrong in that assessment.
No, it has to do with the situation. I'm a situationalist, okay?
Situationalist, okay.
Yeah.
There are many on the left who absolutely reject violent tactics and say there's never a place for violence in the movement. And furthermore, when Antifa hold an event like they're doing this weekend and then call out the broader left to show up in support, like they do, and then there's an incident of violence that tires the whole movement with that violent brush.
Right.
So I want to address those things. But most importantly, I want to address this notion of equivalence. There is no equivalence between Antifa and between the fascists they are representing. There is none. Antifa is showing up to combat, to resist fascists on our streets who have a record of violence themselves, of vandalizing people's homes, of doxing members of Antifa, and on and on and on.
What's doxing?
Doxing is when they release people's identities,
phone
numbers.
Oh, I see. Documenting. I got it.
Addresses, so on and so forth. Whereas the white supremacists that Antifa is resisting, they shoot up Walmarts in the name of Trump. Okay?
Absolutely.
There is no equivalence there.
Right.
So that's why we give airtime to Antifa. We may not agree with their tactics all the time, but they are absolutely on the right side of this struggle.
Yes.
Okay. So with that in mind, let's go to Jack from Rose City Antifa. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you as well. Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
So there is something happening in town this weekend, is there not?
Yeah, unfortunately there is. There's another far right rally on the waterfront, and we're calling out members of the community to show up and resist that.
Can you go into any more detail? Is this the usual suspects? Is this Joey Gibson and his crowd?
Well, actually, the lineup has changed a little bit, so it's still some of the people. The Proud Boys are still definitely a big factor. And a lot of the people who came to events last year, but maybe the ones you wouldn't necessarily have heard of unless you follow like our coverage really closely.
Uh-huh.
But one of the main organizers of this is a guy named Joe Biggs.
Joe Biggs?
He's kind of like the Joey Gibson of this episode, but instead of being like, instead of his like kind of Christian, Joey Gibson's like Christian platitudes, Joe Biggs is more of just like a typical bully boy who likes to posture and talk about guns and just being a tough guy.
Is he a local person?
No, he's from Florida. And actually,
Florida?
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
Wild. Or he lives in Florida. I don't know where he's from. He was a reporter for InfoWars, and he was a big proponent of Pizzagate. And eventually he got fired from InfoWars for whatever reason.
But Pizzagate was crazy.
Yeah, it was bonkers.
Yeah, and you got to wonder what you got to do to get fired from InfoWars.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it seems like it wasn't for like making up weird stories. So after getting fired from InfoWars, he's just been kind of like searching for a new grift, and he found it in doing this rally, I guess.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting career move, I have to say.
Yeah. Might end up not working out, hopefully, but we'll see.
So what, to the degree that you can share with us, what is your plan for this event and what times are involved so people know either to stay away or to come?
Yeah, so I think the far right rally is beginning at 11 a.m., I believe.
Oh, I don't get up that early.
It's Saturday. It's wild. Why do that?
Yeah, really.
So we're kind of asking people to show up before that.
Uh-huh.
On the waterfront. And
where exactly on the waterfront? Do you know?
Yeah. It's not exactly clear at this point because we're not sure where the opposition will be assembled, and we're not sure how the police will have things cordoned off. But we're working closely with Pop Mob and some other groups. So you can find out this information. Pop Mob might have more of a clear idea of where that is.
Mm-hmm.
The waterfront, it would be easy to find a big.
Well, it's hard to miss the waterfront.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just being silly.
And so we're just trying to get people to show up. Pop Mob has like a lot of sort of festival type activities planned. There's going to be a few speakers, and there's we're kind of just trying to keep it light in a way, and try and just build a mass of people to say we reject the far right and their incursions into our town. That's about as much as I can share at this time. Okay. But if you show up, like if people, listeners, want to just show up, they don't have to do what we do, you know? They can just
let's be clear. You guys will probably be masked and probably be armored, but you're not suggesting that ordinary folks who want to join in support have to do something like that.
No. You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
I mean, showing up is just, it's great. Like, just show up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Portland's chief of police, Danielle Outlaw, has come out and said that she expects there to be violence this weekend. This is what...
Wait a minute, she predicts violence?
Yeah, she has. Or she has signaled that the police force will be ready...
Oh, I see.
To address the violence. I'm not sure what that means.
That means actually bring in the Beaverton police.
Right. Here's what she said. Quote, "We are taking this into account," talking about the possibility of violence, "and developing an appropriate plan with adequate resources to prepare for this eventuality. We will be putting out more information in various formats."
Not possibility, eventuality.
Eventuality.
Huh.
"We will be putting out more information in various formats leading up to and during the event in order to keep the public informed of the expectations and the situation. We will also be doing outreach to provide information to local businesses, residents, and visitors so they will know what to expect and the likely areas to be impacted." Now, a wrinkle here is that I guess neither side, the fascists nor the anti-fascists, have obtained a protest permit.
Well, they shouldn't need to.
They should not need to, yes.
I really want to be clear about that.
Yes, absolutely. They should not need to. But we know the pretense that this sets up.
Right.
Right. This gives the police a window into retaliating violently against either or both sides in this situation.
Right.
So if I could ask you, Jack, how are you guys approaching this with regard to the possibility of violence?
Well, we are just there to defend our community against fascists, and we don't want violence. We don't like violence, really, but it's just it's part of the world we live in, especially when police are involved. Like, it's easy for Danielle Outlaw to predict that there will be violence because the police are the instigators of most of the violence. But also, we're going to defend ourselves against the far right. They show up to fight, and so maybe that'll happen. Hopefully not, but they will. I mean, that's their whole reason for coming.
All right, so I want to read another quote here. This is from the president of the Portland Police Association, Daryl Turner. He says, quote, "It's a simple formula. Have enough police officers present on August 17th to protect peaceful First Amendment activities." Turner,
you know, I believe when the police armor up, they get paid extra.
Yeah, I think they do. "If laws are broken, it turns violent. Officers should be empowered with the resources to enforce the laws and keep the peace. We've all grown weary of excuses." Now, this at the same time, it confuses me and clarifies things. Okay, it confuses me in that the president of the police association is saying, hey, we need to have enough cops there to protect peaceful First Amendment activities. That suggests to me that the cops are willing to protect white supremacists again as they march through the streets of Portland by couching what they're doing as peaceful First Amendment activities, which may or may not turn out to be the case. But we know from experience that the cops tend to crack down harder on the anti-fascist side of these confrontations than they do on the white supremacist side. That's a huge problem, and that's something we need to address in our town. The way this makes things more confusing to me is that it seems to disregard the earlier question of whether or not the demonstrators have a permit. It sounds like, no, they don't really need a permit so long as they're engaged in peaceful First Amendment activities, which is, as you say, Joe, the way things ought to be. But the tone here suggests that that applies to white supremacists. So what do we do about this?
Well, that is the classic Leninist question. What is to be done?
Yeah, exactly. Now, Jack, it seems to me that this is a perfect setup. This is a perfect setup for the fascists to instigate violence and then turn around after the police crack down and point at you guys as leftist terrorists once again.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine that happening. It's interesting because of the dynamics in the actual event. The way they usually play out is we more or less win in the streets, and then in the media, well, in certain parts of the media, we take a beating. But yeah, it does sound like the police are going to crack down harder on this rally, but who knows how that's going to play out. Maybe they'll just have barricades. They've been, apparently the FBI has visited some of the far right people's houses just to tell them to chill out. Like, they changed their rhetoric kind of suddenly, like telling people not to bring weapons and stuff, but you know, it's like wink, nudge. Yeah, I guess it's hard to predict what the police are going to do, but I guess everyone should just be careful and just only engage in activities that they feel comfortable with.
I want to suggest two things that are probably never going to happen that reflect my bias toward nonviolence, and I'm going to suggest them seriously. Now you'll probably want to dismiss them or perhaps even make argument against them, but there are two different ways of approaching the fascists. The first approach is to actually show up, all of you, and sit down, literally sit down on the cement, on the grass, and be nonviolently present. And that means possibly taking some hurting. I acknowledge that. But that activity, which is in the long-term tradition of nonviolent resistance, if you're enough in numbers and you all do it, if you have that discipline, could have an enormous impact on the way in which the media and the public sees you. I wondered what you wanted to respond, if you wanted to respond to that at all. It's not probably not something that can happen at this point, but I really think it's the ideal approach to these violent idiots.
Well, I think if we sat down, the fascists would probably just march past us and go find someone else to beat up. And that's why we don't let them march.
I see.
And the history of that kind of nonviolent resistance, I mean, it has a venerable history, but all of those movements, like the American Civil Rights Movement, had a lot of other things going on at the same time. And the history that we're presented with emphasizes nonviolence for kind of obvious reason. You know, like the people writing history is written by the victors, and they don't want people to resist in any other way than nonviolence.
Okay. Well, anyway, let me finish my two plans, neither of which, okay, obviously, I'm afraid, are going to take place. The other one is even weirder okay, than the passive resistance of sitting down. And that is, you have 50 people with leaflets who announce that they're not going to give this thing credibility and urge everybody to just either walk away or go somewhere else. And I wonder how, and I like that one because that's more doable. And I wonder how you would react to that suggestion.
Well, in the history of fascist movements, ignoring it hasn't worked. Everywhere where fascism has taken hold and gained a lot of power are places where there just wasn't enough resistance to it. I mean, not that it's like the people's fault that fascism took over in certain instances, but it's still not a problem that will go away if you ignore it.
Well, I don't mean to. Yeah, go ahead. I'll finish.
Okay. Yeah, I don't like. You can't. I think it needs to be directly confronted in the street, and passing out leaflets, like, information has like is kind of a like raising awareness is kind of has a limited possible impact, I think.
Now, you talked about the venerable history of nonviolent resistance, you know, and that's very true. But I think you could argue quite credibly, I think you'd be correct, as a matter of fact, that the absolute commitment to nonviolence in the case of both Gandhi's movement in India, Dr. King's movement here in the United States, the absolute commitment to nonviolence is what gave moral strength to their entire crusade, and what allowed them in all situations to claim the moral high ground, whether they were faced by bullets or police dogs or water cannons or whatever. Do you feel as if Antifa is capitulating this huge advantage, this moral center, by refusing to renounce violence?
I don't think so. Can you repeat your question again?
Certainly. Do you think Antifa is forfeiting a crucial advantage and really giving up any moral high ground you might have by refusing to renounce violence?
So I don't know if moral high ground is really, I don't know how that would play out in Trump's America, you know?
Yeah, like I have to agree that that's very problematic. It may not be a thing anymore, but go ahead.
I wasn't alive, obviously, during the civil rights era, but the moral high ground might have been more ambiguous at the time. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't.
Because alongside Martin Luther King, there was Malcolm X, and there were more militant groups and people resisting white supremacy. There were like armed groups that protected their communities against the Klan, like by physically confronting them, like with guns, so there is a lot going on that we don't see. And I think the idea of a moral high ground, it's kind of abstract, and I believe we should be responding to the actual material conditions.
Yeah, the concept of moral high ground may be an abstraction, but a commitment to nonviolence is not an abstraction.
Okay, sure.
My concern, and I expressed this earlier in the show, is that any embrace of violence as a tactic by any part of the left allows for the demonization of the entire movement, and I worry about that. I admire you guys and your courage, particularly your physical courage, because you're putting your bodies in danger. I admire that. And your philosophy resonates with me, as it does, I'm sure, a lot of listeners to this show, and frankly, most Americans. We should all be anti-fascists, right? I worry. I worry that the use of violence will make it easier for the other side to discredit the leftist movement. I know that I'm not going to convince you guys to embrace nonviolence, without reservation. But that's where I'm sitting, and I suspect that there's a fair amount of people who feel similar.
Yeah, I before you respond to that, and I do want you to, but I want to be clear on the two suggestions I made. They're almost hypothetical. That is, I do not expect that, given where things are going, that they are perhaps very easy to pull off. They would be great theater, and they might have they might have a change aspect, but it's chancy. I also think that when you look at history in the long term and the rise of fascism in Germany and Italy and so on, fighting in the streets has not had much positive effect. It, in fact, has frightened ordinary folks, ordinary homeowners, ordinary workers, ordinary a variety of liberals, and loud, and opened up the door to authoritarian response. And that's where I'm really concerned about this, because I think that's the thing that you may inadvertently do in actively and probably appropriately opposing the fascist element in the streets.
There actually is a pretty long history of our Antifa tactics being very effective. You might have heard of the Battle of Cable Street. That's kind of like a really famous example.
Well, no, I don't. I think it'd be good if you told our listeners about that.
Okay. So It was in 1936 in Whitechapel. There was this group called the British Union of Fascists, led by this guy named Oswald Mosley.
Oh, Mosley, the Nazi, yeah.
Yeah. He was trying to kind of become the British Hitler, and like if you heard the expression "black shirts," that's kind of his group was the black shirts. And so they kept having rallies in this predominantly Jewish community, and eventually people said enough is enough, and a big coalition of communists and anarchists and just trade unionists and just like Jewish people in the community stood together in the streets and fought them off. And it was actually a pretty violent fight, but they won, and the fascists never came back. And there are tons of examples of this throughout history too.
Are you ready to take some phone calls?
Sure.
Okay, let's do it. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM. We are on the phone with Jack from Rose City Antifa. We're talking about the demonstration, or the counter-demonstration that is planned this weekend to honor another visit to our streets from Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys.
Yeah, and the number to call, 231-8187.
Let's go to the phones. Norm, good morning.
Good morning, Abe and Joe. I love your show. And good morning, Jack. I appreciate what you're doing. I want to talk about what I plan to do, being kind of a coward, but also not wanting to not be there.
A lot of people are in that situation.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That's true. I'm going to be wearing leather shoes, no artificial material shoes, in case I have to kick a tear gas canister. I'll be wearing a leather jacket, also natural leather jacket.
So you're going to murder cows for this thing?
Pardon me?
I was just kidding you. I said you're going to murder cows for this thing, but ignore that.
Yeah, right. Anyway, also welding gloves. In case I have to pick a tear gas canister up and throw it someplace. Uh-huh. Also, I'm not going to be assuming the only people carrying guns are people on the front lines. I'm not going to be assuming the only cops carrying guns are going to be in armor. I'm also going to be assuming there's going to be people that look just like me, start talking a bunch of crap about, you know, about tipping over a garbage can, or about, you know, throwing a brick through a Starbucks or something like that. I'm getting away from those people as fast as I possibly can. Okay, and then last but not least, you know, if bullets start flying, the best thing to do is to lay down flat against a curb.
Huh.
You know, the surest way to take a round is to think that hiding behind a car is going to protect you.
Well, I'm a Monty Python fan, and I say, run away, run away, but never mind.
You know, I'm 62 years old. I've lived a great life. My daughter is safely in a happy marriage, and, you know, whatever happens is going to happen.
Okay, but you are,
going having down said there. Having said that, a parent with a kid, I would strongly say, stay away. Stay far away.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, man. So, I don't know. We have no way of knowing a representative sample of who it is. I don't even know who listens to us. And I think there are a lot of responses that are entirely appropriate, ranging from my two unlikely nonviolent suggestions. I mean, they're unlikely to be carried out, even if I had begun the suggestions 6 months ago and worked on it. I'm not sure it could have worked. But there's need. Remember, this behavior is two things. It's real, physical confrontation, but it's also symbolic. And the symbolic aspect is the aspect that's picked up on by the exploitive media and so on. And that always troubles me.
Jack, you have any comment on that?
On the media?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad. the media tends to not portray us in the best light, but that's kind of why it's all the more important for people to show up, because if there's enough people there, they just, it's undeniable that anti-fascists are just regular people. And also there's things you can do, you know, like you can talk to, if you think the narrative is not correct, then you can just talk to people, you know, like talk to your friends and coworkers and neighbors and say, no, the thing that's being said in the media is incorrect. That's not what actually happened. I mean, the media has never treated like the far left kindly, but...
Well, the media is owned, after all, by the established order.
Right. Yeah, it serves the ruling class in most of the time.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Now, I think some of that, the tradition of that coverage has to do with the fact that the media has been hesitant to portray in a negative light anyone who claims the mantle of patriotism or nationalism. So, I mean, you go to one of these rallies and you see Patriot Prayer and you see the Proud Boys and they're flying American flags and they've got a lot of nationalist symbology. They've got Donald Trump flags. You've got all these things. And all of these things the media have been hesitant to criticize. But if you've noticed that the tenor of the national media in particular in covering the president and his words and recent events that have transpired, things like the shooting in El Paso, there's now a willingness to use terminology in a way that they had not been willing to do before. For example, calling the president a racist, calling his language racist, calling the beliefs of his followers racist. Do you think this might translate into more favorable coverage for you guys, or if not favorable, at least more fair?
It seems totally possible that could happen. Yeah, I it's encouraging to see that shift. It's been really frustrating that the media's conversation about this this whole thing has been like, is Trump racist? Can we call Trump a racist now, rather than saying Trump is a racist and here are some things you can do?
Yeah, I want to point out something that I think almost everybody listening to this, and I'm sure you are aware, the media is owned by the established corporations. In fact, the Channel 2 media is owned by a right-wing corporation in this town. And the fact of the matter is that the media is a conglomerate form of capitalism, and it is totally dominated by an establishment and sometimes a reactionary establishment. And I would never have a hope that particularly the air media, the television and radio and so on, would ever take a position which favored the left. I just can't imagine it.
Yeah, it seems really unlikely that that'll happen in capitalism. But there are alternate news sources, and there are some really great journalists doing work right now. That's another thing that's pretty encouraging, is there's a lot of work being done covering the far right by various journalists across the country, and it's, some of them are doing a really great job. There's been great coverage of Portland by The Guardian and various others.
Yeah, I've been reading some of that coverage in The Guardian. It's pretty great.
Well, in fact, yeah. There is, and this is important, many, many, particularly print media, but also stations like KABU, that are presenting alternative views and actually presenting much more factual coverage. This is important, and it should be supported, and it is a real thing. My concern, however, is the dominant awareness of most people is consequent to the mass media, which is owned, as I say, by corporate interests.
Let's go back to the phones. Mike, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning, KABU. Yeah, has some strategy questions, but first I wanted to address the last caller. Clearly, he's feeling quite reactionary and wants to be part of something. And I gotta tell him there's lots of organizations and friends to get involved with. That doesn't necessarily mean on the front lines, and you don't need to be a martyr or sacrifice yourself. It's fine. Just get busy, and let's. And ending on a note of censorship, which is essentially what he was saying, is absolutely wrong. let's get back to the first, this media's question. What do you guys want? What do you guys need as far as the representative from Antifa? He has repeated it from that moment and hasn't changed, and repeated it over and over. They want people to show up and bear witness.
Yeah, and I want to add, I think that's perfectly appropriate. I'm not trying to discourage the event, given that it's happening.
Thank you. Exactly. I'm not a joiner. I'm not, you know, whatever. But I am woke. I am awoke, and I'm upset about what's happening. And these people just want to cause trouble, and that's their goal. And they've got leadership from all over the country and lots of money and media kind of feeding them, feeding their fears and neuroses. It's pretty sick.
Yeah, now, and I want to make clear, it would be a great thing if 10,000 citizens of the region showed up oppose the fascists. And I'm not at all saying don't go down there. What I'm saying is think about tactics in terms of gaining public support. But you know, I doubt that my views are going to predominate in this particular case.
Well, can I give you an example? I mean, yes, Waterfront Park is our park. They may have a little permanent area, but it's our park. And it's our streets.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we've got an example. Before Antifa was a thing as far as social media and stuff, and which is, I think, all it is, really. Anyway, there was a right-wing neo-Nazi type organization. They were trying to get something going at Multnomah Park in Multnomah Village area. Not only is it a Jewish area, but, you know, it's... affluent area, blah blah blah, and right away, you know, the word got out one way or another. And what happened was 400 or 500 people from around in the neighborhood, and I was working in the area. I showed up myself. I took time off, and it was beautiful. And we just had a huge group with signs and everything, and a little bit of talk beforehand to, you know, to educate people on how to deal with confrontations and things and nonviolence. We just walked around the park, the entire park, a couple times around the path. We weren't confronted by any neo-Nazis, okay? And they had planned to have this event, so that was beautiful. But, of course, if they had shown up the way they're showing up now and blocked the path, for instance, there would have been confrontation. There would have been physical this, that, other thing, especially the way they push. Okay? So we've got to deal with this step by step, but the intention is for people to show up and bear witness. And people, you got cameras in your phones, take pictures of anything and everything you see and send it to Southern Poverty Law Center, send it to Anti-Defamation League, send it to the authorities. At the very least, let's bear witness to this evolution of stupid hate and this becoming legitimized by big power. Also here in Clark County in Vancouver, there are parks and parking lots where shuttles were being staged, and they're taking over parking lots and parks. We need to occupy those parks as well, like Waterfront Park, Marine Park down by the Water Resources Center, on the kind of the east side of Vancouver. I saw cops go back and forth monitoring, but they had literally taken over this thing with this paramilitary organization, clearly, and just taunting everyone and harassing everyone. And that somehow was allowed, I think, just to contain it peacefully. So the police are trying to minimize things as well. But there again, if we had taken over the grassy park area with hundreds of people, it would have made it a thing, and the police would have to change their strategy. Fred Meyer, for instance, towed about 30 of their cars.
Oh yeah,
I remember hearing about that. Pretty funny, actually.
The park, they weren't, and they should have been, based on the behavior and how they completely blocked the parking lot. And it's a small parking lot, but it's a whole strip area on the west side of the park.
So you're talking
going into the marina.
You're talking about a critical mass of counter protesters who show up not only to document everything that's going on, but by their very presence and their numbers, make it very difficult for the Proud Boys to do what they're trying to do.
Yes, and also for the city and the police to accept it, you know, like, hey, this this obviously a majority situation. Obviously, these idiots are a minority. They're actually the only real minority, because you can't base minority on race and all that silliness.
Oh, but you can.
It's on. I know. But let's be real. It's about behavior and actions and thoughts and reactionary thoughts and stuff. That's the real minority, and that's. And these people are running scared, blah, blah, blah. Maybe this is the last gasp of the dinosaurs before they went extinct. I don't know. But whatever it is, we got to confront it. But at the very least, I mean, let's be real. We just got to bear witness. And that's powerful. That's powerful and spread.
It is.
And don't go down if you're upset like I am, whatever. Don't go down there alone. Like,
Hey, listen, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Jack, what do you have to say to that?
Yeah, if you can not come alone, that's great. If you do come alone, you'll probably meet some new friends, though. And yeah, bearing witness is important. I'm curious, I'm just trying to go back in reverse order of the things he said, but I'm curious about that Multnomah Park rally.
Yeah, I don't think I even knew about that.
Yeah. I've never heard of that, but I guess I agreed with much of what you said. Bearing witness is very important. Also, just confronting them and physically stopping them, I believe, is our duty, honestly.
Okay. Susan writes into the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AbeandJoe. To say thank you for another interesting show. Will you kindly ask your guests to clarify for me once again why the out-of-state groups, Proud Boys, etc., are coming to Portland in the first place? What is their purpose?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. There's a few different reasons that, I mean, who knows really, but there's like some ideas that I have had and that others have had are that because Portland is a fairly progressive city, kind of in the middle of a lot of rural areas that are a lot less progressive, let's say. So Portland has been like kind of an outpost for progressive politics and for quite a while, so they see that and want to attack it. We've also had a long and very successful history of anti-fascist organizing. And I sort of think that in a way becomes like a lightning rod for us or for them. Like as if, well, this is the place to come to have a fight. And if they win here, then they've won in a sort of, well, in a way, like in a symbolic way, not that like we're the best anti-fascists, but it's just kind of in their minds, I think that is a factor.
I mean, it's like kind of like a football game?
You know, maybe. yeah, well...
I mean, that seems so silly, really.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Diana, good morning.
Good morning, finally. I've been calling for over half an hour.
Well, thank you for hanging in there.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Jack and all of you to just listen for a couple of seconds while I give you some background, since you don't know me. Jack, I've been to every time that they showed up. I'm an anti-fascist. I show up with Pop Mob, and every time what I am afraid of is the police, with good reason, as we all know. Now, what I wanted to point out and ask us all to just take a moment to imagine is this. Those guys show up at 11 o'clock or whenever they get there. The police, who are all ready to bash some heads of people on the left, are going to show up in enormous numbers this time. Wouldn't it be interesting if instead of the same old scene that we've seen every time, and which I believe keeps away a lot of people who in their hearts are anti-fascist but do not want to get tear gassed by the police, rubber bulleted by the police, lose an eye from the police, won't show up. Couldn't we attract a lot more people, and couldn't we do something really spectacular by being a long way from where they are, blocks away? So there they are, with the police surrounding them. The police who are there to protect them, of course, their right to free speech, and which will keep them effectively from going through the streets and attacking people, which is the reason we're there, is to defend people who could be attacked. I'd like us just to think of that for a moment and think of what it would mean in terms of the surprise, although now it wouldn't be a surprise if that's what we did, but about the effect of that on not only the police, who would have nobody to hit on our side and would have to be seen as keeping the fascists from attacking the populace. Otherwise, you know, the whole story would be very, very different. And I'd like to hear what you have to say, Jack.
Well, before Jack comments, I don't mean to cut you off, Jack. But
I asked Jack to comment. Could you please let Jack comment?
Okay.
Okay. So it would be kind of difficult to protect people from that. Hello?
Yeah, well, I think we lost our caller. Thank you for the call.
Hopefully she's still listening. It would be difficult to protect our community from fascists from that distance. Also, the police will show up wherever we are.
They got their funny wagons.
Yeah, yeah. They can move pretty quickly through the city. As she surely knows from having attended these rallies, they're facing us. The police are defending the fascists against the people in the community trying to resist.
Yeah, I'm sorry the woman was anxious for you to respond, which is appropriate, but I just want to add, any kind of creative response rather than a simple confrontation is something that I think is valuable. And the more creative it is, the more valuable it is. And that's just my view of things.
Yeah. Yeah, creativity is always great. Like, new ideas can be really helpful. The best way to introduce these kinds of new ideas is to get involved with the groups that already exist and see what people who have been doing this work for a long time think, because there's a lot of nuance, and there's a lot of just different contingencies that that every new idea kind of needs to be set up next to see how it would work, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a good criticism of people like me who are commentators rather than necessarily participants.
I think also that, it's an interesting idea, a very novel idea to make a statement by essentially counter-protesting but getting nowhere near the white supremacists.
Might be easier than my two suggestions.
It might be, but there also seems to be a gravitational attraction between the two groups, and I think you might have a hard time convincing everybody to keep their distance from one another. But anyway, let's go back to the phone. Sean, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I have sort of a demographic question. One of the things that infuriates me about these gutless cowards is that they claim to not be fascist. And like, just who exactly did they think made up the base of support for the Nazi Party and for the black shirts in Italy? It was the small business, petty bourgeois, entrepreneurial, anti-union scum, the middle and upper middle classes who hate labor unions. Just exactly who do you punks think you are? You are the fascists. You can wrap yourself up in the flag. You can wrap yourself up in the First Amendment. Demographically, you are identical to the base of the fascist support all throughout history. So have a little courage, have a little guts, and call yourself fascist. So it's like a demographic thing. Like, these people are trying to pretend that they're not fascist. They don't have the courage to admit that they're fascist, when everything about them, especially their anti-union stance, is completely fascist. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Well, yeah, thanks for the call. I think what you have here is the same sort of semantic pressure release valve that you have around the term racism, right? In American culture, one of the worst things you could be called for the past several decades is a racist. So if you are, if you happen to be a racist, it's really easy to let yourself off the hook by saying, oh, you know, I don't wear a white hood or I don't have a swastika tattooed on my head. The likewise being a fascist, it's, you can say, well, I'm, you know, I'm not a supporter of Hitler. I'm a patriot. Yeah, I'm not a fascist. I think it's a similar kind of dodge, but I think the caller's right.
That's pretty much exactly what I was going to say. The comparison to the word racism, it just means no one wants to imagine themselves as a bad person. So,
right, exactly. Let's go to Robbie. Robbie, good morning.
Hey, Joe. Good morning, Joe. Abe, how are you doing today?
Very well. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. Hey, I wanted to actually, I just wanted to comment on a couple things. I wanted to plug an event that I'm doing, not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday after.
Sure.
August 27th, I'm putting on a comedy show / education event. We have Innovation Law Lab. They do basically legal representation for migrants and immigrants. We're going to be doing a fundraiser on August 27th, 6 to 9 p.m. It's $20. You get a raffle ticket. We got some great street artists donating stuff. And I just wanted to let all your listeners know that'll be a week from next week. So 2 weeks from today on August 27th. And then just to think that the cognitive, I believe you said it was like them dodging the word fascist. I kind of see it as cognitive dissonance. I see that, you know, not all the people on the right are extremely, I think there's people on the right that are being like led astray. And so then there's, that gives fruitation for like people like Joey Gibson to say, oh, they're the fascists. You know, it's like this weird kind of like bully mentality. It's like, oh, you know, they're calling us fascists. No, you're the fascist. And it's kind of like that thing. And then what that does is that creates the cognitive dissonance among their side to spread. But anyway, I really appreciate what you're doing. Looking forward to seeing you all on the 17th. And hopefully I'll get to see you on the 27th. Thank you.
Hey, thanks very much.
Thanks for the call. I want to be clear. I do not think people should stay away. I think that's a wrong approach. I think that there's a lot of creative activity or even just standing up, carrying a sign, whatever, that might be extremely helpful in this situation. What I'm urging, however, is not having a physical confrontation with these neo-Nazis. I think it's a mistake strategically, and it's a mistake intellectually, and it can be very hurtful. And what do you think? I'm talking to our guest now.
Oh, hi.
Sorry, man. I didn't mean to cut you out of the action.
No, that's quite all right. I think I agree. People should definitely show up in whatever capacity they feel like they can, and everyone should just respect the diversity of tactics. The anti-fascists who you see doing things that get called violent have reasons and have strategies that you might just not know about as like someone who's not a part of those groups. So I would urge everyone to just give people the benefit of the doubt that they know what they're doing. And I would also encourage everyone to study up on the history of anti-fascism, because these tactics that are militant have a long history of working.
Okay, I think that's a good suggestion. I think that anyone who does some serious research and looks into all of these issues not only comes away with knowledge, but probably with a desire to act.
Yeah.
All right, let's get another phone call in here before we have to say goodbye. Harry, good morning.
Greetings, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the things I'm going to be doing is I'll be calling and leaving a message at the mayor's office saying that I'm holding him personally responsible for whatever happens there, because these marchers, the Proud Boys and whatever, do not have a permit. And it's up to the city to protect us from such people. I mean, they don't even have a permit, but the police are going to be there. They can stop it. The mayor and the police can stop this rally immediately by just confiscating their guns. I think they'll be bringing guns and stopping it at the beginning. They need to stop it. Second is contacting our governor. and tell them what's going on. Well, maybe the National Guard needs to come in to
remove
their guns. You know, and why this is so important is what happened this weekend. Didn't the Proud Boys and stuff have a march at Coos Bay?
They did.
Yeah. And so why are they able to go around our state? And they remember, for they're from out of state. And one of the reasons why our governor, about 3 or 4 years ago, when that standoff at Harney County, and people from out of state came in with guns, and our governor did nothing. Instead of, most other states would have called out the National Guard, called martial law, rounded all those people up, and that would have been the end of it. But and since they think our governor is weak, this is why they're doing this. Now they're going all around state. Now, it's against the law to cross state lines to commit a crime. Well, these Proud Boys are crossing state lines to commit a crime by not applying for a permit to march in Portland. So then Monday morning, of course, that means one of their biggest supporters is Lars Larson. So when he comes from Washington and crosses the bridge and go to KXL to do his show, they can arrest him.
Well, I'm going to pass on that one.
Okay. Also,
that would be lovely.
Throw water balloons.
Hey, thank you very much for the call. There's a couple things there, I think. First of all, I think the threshold for confiscating someone's guns in the United States is pretty high. I think you have to be basically caught in the act of committing a crime to have your gun taken away. I could be wrong about that, but that's my understanding. Secondly, yes, the city of Portland requires demonstrators to get a permit. That doesn't seem to be universally enforced. Nor does it seem to be universally applied for.
Nor do I think it's constitutional.
Exactly. And, of course, the overarching question is there's a permit called the First Amendment that's already and permanently in effect. So I don't know how much legal authority the governor or anybody else would have to take criminal action against any of the fascists who come here to march unless they actually commit a crime.
Yeah, and we're running out of time. I know we have callers who want to get on, but I want to give you guys, the anti-fascist people, a chance to make a final statement. You want to go ahead and do that?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. This is in response to the last caller. I don't think even if the state wanted to protect us, they actually really could. I think it's up to us to defend ourselves, and anti-fascists are just ordinary people. We're just your neighbors and someone working at their grocery store or a teacher or a nurse or just anybody. We're just people who have decided that we will not allow fascists to march down our street unopposed, and we will stop them from marching. We have to physically stop them from marching down the street because they will not stop at just marching, and things will escalate and things will only get worse. So I just urge people to show up on the waterfront on Saturday and find an area of the demonstration where you feel comfortable. There'll be lots of things going on. Pop Mob has a lot of things planned that are like more fun sounding, and there'll be interesting speakers. So please, everyone, just support your community, and on Saturday.
What time should they be there?
Good point. So like I said earlier, the fascists are planning to be there around 11, so if we show up before that, that is ideal.
Okay, I realize we're functionally almost out of time here. And I just wanted to thank you guys. I know we've been hoping to get you on the air, and this is the second time with us. And I hope it's both informative and makes people think about stuff. It's really important that this dialogue take place, and I'm really disappointed and not surprised that the ordinary media has simply sensationalized the problems.
Yeah.
All right, sir. Well, thank you for joining us this morning, and I hope that everything goes smoothly and nonviolently for everybody
yes.
this weekend. And thanks once again. I hope we can have you on again sometime.
Yeah, thanks so much. Good to talk to you.
All right. And thanks for everybody who took part in the conversation today.
We're sorry we missed so many people.
We did. This is a discussion the left needs to have. And I'm just happy and grateful that we're able to participate in that to the limited extent that we are. So thanks to everybody who took part. And be safe out there this weekend. And we'll talk to you next week.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday at 4:30 p.m.
Give me an F!
Tune in August 16th from noon till 4 p.m. for KBOO's celebration of Woodstock 50 years later, featuring previously unreleased music and more from the original festival tapes, plus recent interviews with the voices of participants and musicians who attended the festival, including Country Joe of Country Joe and the Fish and Jorma Kaukonen of the original Jefferson Airplane. That's August 16th starting at noon for KBOO's celebration of Woodstock 50 years later. Tune in.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9:01. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, they look at the origins of radical right-wing power.